The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
In the center of the universe, on the planet Eternia, looms Castle Grayskull, ancient fortress of mystery. Its power sought by the dark forces of Snake Mantle. Sanctuary of Sin.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show, coming at you live on tape digitally. This is Knowing is Half the Podcast, and I am Ray Stakanis.
I am Robert Clark Chan, and I am in no way live or on tape or even digital. I exist in the ether space.
I'm Gina Bellito, and I am undead.
Well, we knew that. That's been the case for, I mean, that was a season three twist at this point, so.
Gina Bleto's dead. Undead, undead, undead,
undead. I don't even
know. Bow House, nobody? Right, just me? All right, fuck y'all.
No, that's just you. Yes.
I hate when I'm forced to have the same knowledge as Ray, or lack thereof as Ray.
Oh, man. That's the ultimate reference level test, where it's just like, oh, Ray didn't get it, but I didn't get it too.
Oh.
My reference level isn't that bad. How dare you? Just not with, you know, books or smart person things. We're not talking about G.I. Joe Extreme this week, although we've been really enjoying it, and we've been enjoying G.I. Joe Extreme maybe a little bit too much. So I thought I'd throw a little curveball at the team. Curveball, changeup, sinker, I don't know what we'd call it. I said, hey,
the one next where they hit you in the head.
Beanball. I'd throw a beanball at the podcast. And I said, hey, Masters of the Universe Revelation on Netflix dropped the second half of the season one, five episodes, and we loved the first five episodes. It was really a lot of fun with you guys doing this. So let's start it up. And nobody answer than that.
Are you saying the second half of the season one, five episodes? I thought this straight up said season two.
Oh, maybe it did.
There's a lot of shenanigans going on right now in animation. And one of the things is when they try to pretend that two seasons are just one so they can pay the writers less. So I looked for it and sure. I thought it specifically said season two. So let's call it season two. We don't want to be part of those shenanigans.
Well, it's referred to as two parts, but so this is part two, episode one. Part two, not season two, part two.
Yeah, that they might be doing some shenanigans, but I consider it season two.
Yeah, Wikipedia says part one and part two.
Oh, so shenanigans!
Shenanigans indeed.
You can't have that animation many writer. Months. You can't have that many months go by and still call it the same season.
God! I can't. I'm looking at the Wikipedia, which says that part one of Revelation holds an approval rating of 94% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Everyone loves it. Everyone loves it. What's trash. Wrong with you two? Get on board.
I wonder if I was being overly harsh because I was looking for negative things for the podcast. But I will say that this episode that we watched reminded me of everything that I hated about part one, season one, whatever your shenanigans want to call it. And I'm going to be open-minded to differing opinions, but I am going to say that if someone does have a differing opinion, if someone thinks that this is well-written, that you are basically the anti-vaxxer of this argument. and that you're not basing it in fact. You're basing it in weird conspiracy theories that are telling you that this is good, when in fact it's not.
So in this case, is a vaccination a solid liberal arts education?
Yeah.
That you like understand how these things operate and how art is supposed to affect people and whatnot?
Yeah, yeah. I would say the anti-vaxxers are the ones who, like, this is the, if you watch it and you're like, that was good, then you're the same person that says vaccines have a little microchip in them so that 5G can track you. This is a well-crafted cartoon done by people who know how story and tone work. It's the same vibe.
No, because the tone of this is deathly serious, followed by weird joke.
Yeah,
I think that's a great tone. It sets.
And this was my problem with the first season, the first part. The tone is all over the place, and they very clearly couldn't, like, it's very dark. Like, especially this episode gets really dark, and depressing.
Yes, it does.
And then they're like, well, what if we just like have the world's worst pun that can barely be considered a pun? Then that'll keep it cheeky. And in reality, it's like, no one is happy. No one's happy with the pun. No one's happy with although I guess 90% of Rotten Tomatoes is happy. But yeah, this is honestly like when it first started, the first scene in this, I had some hope. I wanted to see this baby Teela backstory.
I did like that. Okay. So this is part two, episode one, Cleaved in Twain, available currently on Netflix. And the opening scene, it was my favorite scene of the entire episode. What is it?
Cleft in Twain.
Cleaved in Twain.
Cleaved in Twain.
What are you talking about, Chan?
What?
The title of the episode is, in fact, Cleaved in Twain, Chan.
Are you serious?
Are you going to correct me and be 100%. Wrong?
100%. Oh, my God.
This is the best episode of this show we've ever had.
They can't get the fucking grammar in the show titles right?
You know why, Chan? Subverting expectations. How about that?
No. I expect it to be shit.
Here's the thing. I'm Googling it right now because Chan is right. Grammatically, it's incorrect, but it's on Urban Dictionary. It says the best fucking thrash metal band to come out of New Zealand.
Oh, boom.
Cleaved in Twain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Turn, so maybe.
Change your tune now.
All right. You know what? I'm going to look them up and I will get back to you next week. what I think about the band.
Chan's gonna you're gonna go down a rabbit hole and then you're gonna be one of the anti-vaxxer like people, except in this case you're gonna be like, look, all I'm saying is Masters of the Universe Revelations is well crafted. I know it's not popular to say, but where are you getting your reviews from? Are you getting your reviews from the mainstream media? Because that's the problem.
I mean, look, I just picture Chan now next week. He says, hey, guys, how about instead of a cartoon, we watch this documentary from this great band, Cleaved in Twain. I'm really into them.
You know what? I will say the first 2 minutes of this, or however many minutes it is, when they, because like basically Man at Arms does a recap and they use the OG animation and the OG animation style and character designs. And I was really into that. The fact that when he is like, Man at Arms is basically saying like, this is what happened. This is how magic left Eternia. And they're showing it in flashbacks, but instead of actually showing footage from this new cartoon, they are showing the original 80s character designs for all of them. So when we see them on the battlefield, it is the totally hulked up, like 80s, tiny waisted men. They all look like the action figures that we all have. And I thought that was a cool, I love when they play with styles in cartoons, like play with different drawing styles. So that was very cool. And then it goes into like a little bit of a Teela flashback, and that was cool. So I honestly was like, oh, they fixed it in season two. They fixed it. And then from that point on, it goes into the very weird, like all over the place tone that makes it feel like 10 different people worked on, like from one line to the next, yeah. It was like different people.
And before we even like get to the first scene, I did have one thing I wanted to say, because the show opens with like an explanation and like an intro that like tells you about the world. But this described the world at the beginning of part one, which has now drastically changed and shifted leading into part two, meaning that none of this intro material still applies anymore, honestly. So why is it even there?
No, that's not. I mean, it's still.
Oh, the powerful just... He-Man, although like He-Man isn't even there anymore, you know.
Yeah, he is. What are you talking
about? But we already know he's not the main focal point. So when they designed the whole thing to say this world revolves around He-Man, if you've seen part one, you look at it, you go, not really anymore. He died. He lost his sword. Look,
there's a lot wrong with this episode, but this recap was not one of them.
That recap is old news. That is like reading a newspaper from 2015 and deciding it's still current.
What do you think a recap is, dude? You're like, oh, I want a recap of things that haven't happened yet.
Why didn't they recap what happened in part one? That's the recap that I needed right there.
I think if Chan plays it, they went to the underworld. They did.
That's what I want.
They recapped some of it. They're not going to go through every story beat in a recap.
To be fair, I believe there was, in the diatribe delivered by Skeletor a little later that goes on for, I don't know, 18 of the 25 minutes of this show.
It's long.
He covers all of that, too. He is doing the exposition recap season one.
You know what? I take it all back.
Don't
good writing.
Make fun of that Skeletor voice.
Here's the thing. Man, I love Mark Hamill, and he is having a grand old time with this, as well he should. And I appreciate that he is having fun, and I'm glad he had fun.
Because he's the only one having fun.
Words that he said are garbage.
Yeah, I will say that there's no joy in this remake. That's like one of my problems, is literally no one, it's so dour and it's so depressing. And then they're like, oh, we'll throw in a bad pun, but that makes it worse. It's like someone like mugging you and then murdering you and then just being like,
oh boy,
oh, I'll hope you have a good night. Get it? Cause you're not going to, cause you're probably going to die. It's like, just fucking kill me, man. Like either like harmlessly mug me and make some jokes, or just kill me. But you can't like kill me and then make a joke. And that's what this cartoon feels like it's trying to do. It's trying to be like, okay, like we're going to be, let's depress the shit out of you for a while to the point where you're like, why am I watching this? And then we'll put a badly worded pun in there. And then we'll go back to depressing you. No one's having any fun. No one's having any fun.
They create this very grim, dark world of very, you know, gray morality, and it's very dour and depressing, like you said. And then every so often, they'll just decide one character in this moment will just decide that they're hilarious. And then we'll just go right back to being grim, dark again. And you're right. Tonally, it's very, very strange. Now, this opening scene, we reveal and we get the thing we've been talking about, like, you know, who could have possibly seen this coming? It turns out that Teela is the daughter of the sorceress and Man-at-Arms, the thing that they heavily implied 97 times an episode.
They said that at the end of part one, they said it.
Oh, did they actually say the quiet part out loud at the end of it? I honestly probably checked out by then.
Yeah, yeah. She, the sorceress says, like, my daughter or some crap like that. And
oh, I don't even remember that. But so it's this whole moment of essentially, like, the baby's there, and the sorceress is like, I'm going to go and go into my destiny to be the sorceress. I'm going to descend into the castle in the waters. Duncan, Man-at-Arms, you got to take care of Teela. I'm out, bees. And then she's just like checks out and everybody's crying. And it was honestly a pretty good scene. I liked it.
Yeah, yeah, this was good. Like, young Duncan can fucking get it. That dude is hot AF. and you know, there's it's a nice little like emotional moment where the sorceress goes into the magic waters, like Ray said, to and mm-hmm. she cries into them, which, let me tell you, if this does not become a plot point of she was never really gone because she mixed her DNA with the essence of this water or whatever, like, then that's some bullshit. Because honestly,
what are you saying, that all you got to do is mix your DNA with the magic water to be live forever? Because I got some plans. Let me tell you what, right now.
She, like, the fact that she cried into it and the camera focused on it as it mingled with the magic waters.
I was expecting it to do sort of like magical thing, like a bling, and it didn't.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. I hope that this is Chekhov's tear that they're setting up. Because, spoiler alert, she dies in this episode. But then I was like, oh, shit, okay, they're going to have her. This is how she's going to be able to come back, because she was never really gone, because a part of her was sort of sustained in this magic. But then they sort of have her appear as a ghost and, like, dissipate. So I don't know if they're not going to do it, but I'm here to tell you, hire me for season three or part three or whatever, and I'll fix all these flaws.
Part three of season one, you mean?
Yeah.
Are you going to get paid below scale?
Season one.
Yeah. Those bitches are already getting paid below WGA scale. So, you know.
Well, so we then cut back to the present where now we have the end of season one. Essentially.
Oh, real quick,
Skeletor.
Though.
Yes.
I understand the name of Teela's mother based on the captions, because it doesn't show up in IMDb. Is Teela Na, Teela-NA.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So, like, her name is Teela, Teela's mom is what that is. That's what they went with?
They turned to the writer and they said, so is the sorceress's name also Teela? And the writer just went, nah. And then they're just like, cool,
oh,
we got it.
God. Kill me.
I feel like they're like, hey, what's the name of Teela's mother? It's like, moms don't have names. I call my mom Mom, and she doesn't have a name, so we just call her Teela Ma. Like, that's really on the nose. Can we just Teela Na? Like, fine, whatever, man.
Oh.
I don't know what kind of weird ass relationship you have with your mother.
Oh,
you probably don't even.
I don't like that.
Anymore.
I don't like that. That implies that the sorceress named her daughter after herself, and I don't like that.
What's wrong with that?
Is it?
I mean,
I knew somebody she was named after her mother, and I always thought that was a little bit weird. There was a brother and sister, and they were both named after both of their parents, and I was just like, why would you do that to your family?
You know what it is? It's some white people nonsense, because it's like, give them their own identity or change it a little bit or something, or like give it my parents, my middle name is my mom's name, but like, you know, only certain specific white people make like a the second and the third or a junior.
Like, I mean, if her name were Teela Jr., I'd be all about it.
Is this a weird time to mention that I'm Ray Stakatus II? Is this a weird time to mention that? Yes, that is a true statement.
I'm not in favor of it. I just think like it's they already have your last name. Like your ego is sufficiently stroked. There's no need for more like putting your stamp on. Italians don't do that.
Oh yeah, Italians will never do that.
They don't usually.
Listen, Anthony Sabato Jr. has something to say to you about that.
First of all, Antonio Sabato Jr. is not Italian. He's like Spanish or something.
Yeah, like Christopher Columbus. Thank you. Christopher Columbus Jr.? Because he was Spanish.
You mean like all of the rape babies that he left behind? They're calling them all Christopher Columbus Jr.?
Mm, oh, man. Ray loves those rape babies.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit.
So anyway,
Italian.
Thomas Jefferson. Of course he's Italian.
Gino, what are you talking about?
I was wondering where you were going with that.
I didn't think he was.
I had his
claim him, Gina. He's
a weird, like, he's a weird, like, creepy Trump dude that when he was in the movie The Big Hit, which I saw like three times in theaters,
sure,
I loved him. And then all of a sudden it turned out he was like a kook.
Show of hands, how many people here thought that Gina had Antonio Sabato Jr.'s face on her wall as a poster as a child? I'll put my hand.
1,000% yes.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm genuinely shocked about this.
I was not a boys on my wall girl. I had like a Kermit.
Your boys in your dungeon.
I had a yeah. Now I do. No, but I was like, I had like a Kermit the Frog in a fake Calvin Klein ad thing. But I did the only one that I ever did, that's which right, was like a friend gave it to me because she knew that I had a big crush on him, was like, it was a Christian Slater poster for a little period of time. But other than that, I was not a pop magazine reading preteen or teen girl who would then put stuff. I had like a collage of Starburst wrappers that I'd made in art class on my wall and
all right,
Gina,
things like
you're-
that.
Really trying to bury it, but I heard it and I'm going to bring it up.
Yeah.
That when we're talking about putting sexy whatevers on your wall, whatever you're into, yeah. Kermit the Frog, yes, in his, yep, you know, like, yep, reporter outfit, that's fine. Kermit the Frog, you know, is like dressed like a director or whatever. Kermit the Frog in a Calvin Klein ad is 100% the most fuckable Kermit. So I heard that,
they
and I know
big what at the
up
time, and it was like a funny parody. Mm-hmm. It, yeah, was. He's wearing, you know what it is? He's wearing jeans, and you could see like his Calvin Klein underwear waistband, and it's in black and, mm-hmm, white, and it's shot like those ads, mm-hmm, that were big when I was, yes, like 12 or something like, mm-hmm, that. And I thought it was hilarious, and it was on my wall for years.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think, mm-hmm, my parents, hilarious, probably still have it somewhere.
No. I just bought these Playboys for the hilarious jokes inside.
Look, I had that.
Or they're naked that, women? I had no idea.
I had that Kermit poster on my wall for the articles, Chan.
I have no doubt.
Oh, my. No notes on this section either. This is all perfect. all on brand and all perfect. And let's keep moving forward before Gina then has to next defend Christian Slater as well. But, you know, the star of Cuffs, I'm not going to fight it. He's sexy.
Wait, he's not like a weird Trumpy guy, is he? Because he still works. So. He's in that show with Pacey from Dawson's Creek. Dr. Death or something, or Dr. Doom.
Okay. Neither of those are things.
Dr. Doom. I remember that sitcom with Christian Slater and Dr. Doom. Yeah, it's set in Latveria, and it's wonderful.
I think there's a show called Private Practice Lawyers. Dr. Death.
And I remember the show where Christian Slater gains 140 pounds to become Dr. Death Steve Williams, the famous professional wrestler who had quite a career in Japan.
I'm telling you, it's if I like this is a show that exists.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on right now, you know, and it's going to be called Dr. Death.
You know what, Ray, keep going. yeah, Gina, keep Googling Antonio Sabato Jr. butt, and yes. I will look up Dr. No. Death.
It's called Dr. Man. Death. Oh, my God. I'm totally right. Dr. Death. It's him and Pacey from Dawson's Creek. / Mighty Ducks,
like
Dr. Death.
Jen, who could forget?
I was at the Deadline Contenders event this weekend, and it was one of the panels, so I knew I could not be that far off.
Did you tell Christian
Joshua
Slater
Jackson,
you had his picture
Christian
on your
Slater,
wall?
Slater, Joshua Jackson, Christian Slater, Alec Baldwin. 2021 miniseries. It's supposed to be very good.
Well, kudos to him for gaining all that weight. And I guess... the story needs to be told.
No one understands your wrestling things.
Chan, who could forget the episode where the BAFTA school special when Dr. Doom had to pull him aside and tell Christian Slater he was too stiff? Man,
yeah,
that was...
Yeah.
That was for about two people in our audience, but they loved it.
Ray gets it.
You know like what? It. When are we starting the Dr. Death Steve Williams podcast? I think that's...
oh, my God. Yeah, you guys have a lot of time in your life for new podcasts. It works
until Steve Williams finds out about it, and then the podcast is over.
The Lariotto.
Anyway, so Skeletor has won. He has won the day. He's come back. He stabbed He-Man. And he goes on roughly a 22-minute monologue, and I just wrote down here, I am completely lost. I don't know what's even happening anymore. Why is he still talking? Why is nothing happening in this episode? He's just gloating and laughing and making fun of people and trying to look powerful, and none of it effing matters, you know? And then finally, as if a break to the audience, Prince Adam stands up and goes, I will face you. I am Adam. And he is Cringer. And then Cringer jumps from the sky. I don't know where the fuck he came from. He jumps from the sky and attacks Skeletor, thus allowing all the imprisoned heroes to become free. And then Skeletor has a big old battle against Man-at-Arms that does not go well for Man-at-Arms at all.
Okay, first of all, if anything happens to Cringer, I'm out. Like if his spine gets broken or something like that,
this show wouldn't do that. Oh,
here's the thing. This show does a lot of stuff because they don't know what they want their tone to be. So I could picture them breaking Cringer's spine and then being like, oh, he's paralyzed now.
100%. Because they're taking like their biggest nods to nostalgia are to like, bring out characters like, hey, remember this guy? You had this action figure, and then they immediately kill them.
Yes. Yeah, they
multiple times.
Yeah,
so like breaking Cringer's back is absolutely a thing they would do.
Yeah, it's very like, I think at some point maybe the pitch for this was like, what if we like you know, like turn nostalgia on its head? But I think that like people just didn't really know how to do it, so then they were just like, let's just make it depressing as fuck. But there's at some point, like the tonal shift is very clear to me. At some point, someone says more like a weakened.
Yep, that is Skeletor.
Yeah.
Can you play that? Do you have it by any chance?
Let me see.
Sorceress, you awakened. More like a weakened.
Oof.
I mean, give me a break, man. Like, again, it's... Like, here's the thing. There's different versions of He-Man that like the movie was campy and like the original had the nostalgia factor, but none of those, it feels like someone like made a lasagna and was like, you know what's great? Fucking lasagna is great. And everyone's like, yeah, lasagna is great. And it's like, what does everyone love about lasagna? They love noodles. They love sauce. Oh, crap. You know what else is really good? Chocolate eclairs are really good. Okay, so we're going to make a lasagna, but like, let's fucking slap a chocolate eclair in there. And then someone's like, that sounds like it would taste bad. And also like probably melt and ruin your pots. And they're like, yeah, you know what might fix it? Some dog shit. Should we put some dog shit in there to fix it? And it's like at some point, just pick a lane. Make it a campy remake with nods to the original. Or... But like I think it was like a Sketch Cram pitch that someone pitched when it was like when Riverdale was coming out and they were trying to make like sexy, dark, gritty reboots of everything. And like someone came in and was pitching like, okay, so it's a pitch session. And it's like a sexy, dark, gritty reboot of Garfield. And then like there's a sexy, dark, gritty reboot of like the Ziggy comic. And it just got like to be more and more ridiculous. And I feel like that's what this is. I feel like this is like, someone was like, oh, what if we did like a gritty reboot of He-Man and the Smurfs and this and that? And like just like did a sketch of it without actually knowing what they were doing.
Yeah.
I hate it. And that pun is like a great, it's like, oh, cool. We just stabbed this dude. We're showing a gaping wound. He's going to make a pun. Cringer might break his spine. These two characters are going to turn into demons and their souls are going to be trapped. All right, let's just put it all in a pot and put some dog shit in it.
I just picture Gino wearing like a party hat with one of those like noisemaker party things, you know, that you blow into and then it unrolls. And I just picture Gina being like, all right, you fucks, let's do all this depressing shit and then we're all gonna die. You know, like that's how I picture Gina watching this show now.
Yeah,
it's,
it makes me angry. I want it to be good. I loved the original. I fucking love the movie. Like, I'm one of those people that I think the movie is great. I think it's great. I love Gwildor walking around eating chicken and like not realizing like that he's eating ribs and it's an animal. I think it's hilarious. This is none of those things. This doesn't pick a lane.
So okay,
I have no attachment particularly to the original. Like, I know of it and I did watch it, but like, I don't have any particular love for it. I never really had any of the toys, but I am willing to get on board. Like, She-Ra's one of my favorite series of the past 10 years. So, and I had zero attachment to that. And they made something that was, that worked, that I imagine it worked for people who enjoyed She-Ra, as kids and can enjoy it as adults. And this just is, there's nothing. There's no, the animation is good. Like Adam's like coughing up blood. I'm like, oh man, this is vintage anime. I love this. Okay.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah.
Good look. Yeah.
And then it just like, but it doesn't match up with the story or the writing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, when we, here's a little peek behind the TV writing curtain here. When you write an episode of TV, you sort of have to like produce that episode, which basically means you go to a crap ton of meetings. And one of the meetings that you go to is called a tone meeting. And that's when like you sit in the room with the director and a bunch of other, like, you know, the DP and a bunch of other important people. And you go through what the tone of a scene is, so that like everyone is sort of on the same page, because that's how important tone is. Because if you write a scene and maybe the words are a little bit dark, but you're intending for something slapsticky to be going on in the background, the director needs to know, oh, by the way, even though it looks like it's heavy because they're talking about like their dead mom or whatever, you know, it's supposed to be funny. So everyone needs to be on. That's how important tone is. And for me, this is, I just can't get past it. And here's the thing, like the writing itself might even be good. Like the actual, I mean, not the puns, they're crap, but like the words that they're saying might be good. I just can't tell because the tone is so like disconcerting. You know what I mean? It's like a hot guy. Like just like with really bad facial hair, like you're just like, I can't, like you might be hot under that weird like facial hair pattern you have going on, but until that's taken care of, I cannot pay attention to anything else.
This is why I have a beard, by the way, because I'm afraid that too many women will see the attractiveness underneath and just throw themselves at me, but this way they have to say like,
you,
I can't be sure, I can't tell, so I'd better not do that and possibly ruin a marriage and a family, and you know, he's probably got a child, you know, the normal.
I feel that it's not that I don't want to shave for 6 weeks straight, it's that I just need to be like, back off, ladies.
Yep Ray gets
Jen
it.
Jen gets it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and that's the name of this episode. So Sorceress is not at full power. She teleports all the heroes away, and then Skeletor murders the Sorceress. Straight up kills her. Wow. Adam is dead. We don't really have a moment to reflect on this, though, because they immediately whisk us away. And one of the things that Gina complained about is that you don't have time to reflect on anything before the show just says, okay, let's keep moving. Adam is down and he's hurt and he's stabbed. Yes.
Also, like, this is another thing that I complained about in the first season, but like they don't let anything emotionally sit. But also, because we just found out that she's Teela's mom, we don't, like, for the rest of the characters, there's no emotional moment. Like, this woman is a virtual stranger to pretty much everyone except for Man at Arms. Like, but like, imagine if they had spent an episode in a flashback of like her meeting Man at Arms, them falling in love, her sort of being tortured because she knows that her destiny is to leave, her finding out that she's pregnant and being like really happy about it, but explaining to him. Imagine if they had done all of this, and imagine if they had like put in some backstory of like, Tila's always sort of had dreams about her like what she remembers of her mom, which maybe isn't much. Maybe it's just her eyes. Imagine seeing an episode of that and then watching her die instead of like this. Like, we get a minute of a backstory of her leaving Tila and leaving Man at Arms, and like that's sort of it. And then she dies, and Man at Arms is like, "No, you. No one knows this, but I was so in love with you. Be sad for me." And mm-hmm. like Tila's sort of being like, "All right, I mean, who the fuck are you, lady? Like, I know you as a sorcerer. Like, I just, there's like things that they could have done. That then when you see it, you're like, fuck, they were finally reunited after like Tila spent years sort of just dreaming in snippets of her mom." And she only gets like a moment to tell her she loves her, and then that's it. Like, it would be just so much more emotionally resonant. I feel like these are, I think I probably said this exact same thing last season, but I feel like these are people who like have seen TV and sort of know how it works, but it's like they've seen videos of chefs but have never actually cooked.
Like, burn, Gina. You've watched a ton of Master Chef, but you've never once actually been in a kitchen, and then you go for it.
Yeah, exactly. Like you sort of know some things. Like, you know that killing off a family member is an emotional moment, but if you're not showing backstory that leads up to why we emotionally care about it, we don't care about it.
I know I need to blanch these green beans, but I don't know where the water comes from.
Ray's still on the cooking show kick, so don't worry about
him. I'm very hungry now, guys. I need to, full disclosure, I didn't eat much.
He's already pitching in his head a competition cooking show where people watch episodes of MasterChef but have never been in the kitchen and then go into the kitchen and try and cook.
I like it. Yeah. I'll host. Let's go.
Here's the thing. Ray's going to be dreaming about this for a while. And then finally, when he's reunited with his cooking show, it's going to die in front of him. And everyone's going to be like, oh, shit. We care about this. Because
and then
Ray's
Gina's
going to
be in the background being like, that was tonally off.
Yeah. I mean, that's just to be expected.
So, okay. Adam is down still. We got to get through this thing.
Speaking God. No. Hey, What did I say? Before we even started, I said, you're going to try and get out early, but I'm going to drag this out like one of Skeletor's goddamn exposition dumps. And I'm sticking to it. There are two no's back to back. There's the one that Skeletor does when they disappear. He's like, no. And you're like, oh, God, fucking Darth Vader. Okay, whatever. And then immediately after that, fucking Sorceress dies and Man at Arms like, no. I'm like, seriously, once is too many. Two right back to back, you're just being I don't know what the word is. I have no words for how terrible that is. That's it. I'm done.
Oh, I thought you were gonna play it for us. I was waiting for the sound.
Why would
cue.
I do that? No.
Because you're
absolutely just not
a vocal, an audio thing that would happen on a show that does drops of audio things. I assumed our listeners would get to hear it too. Why am I crazy? Gina, am I wrong? You were waiting for it too, right?
I mean, yeah.
God damn it. Fine. For you, the audience.
No!
There's Skeletor, and now here is Man at Arms.
No!
So who did it better, you guys?
Man at Arms was a little bit longer. He knew he had to. He's got better airflow in his lungs, I think.
He knew he had to manage the emotional burden that the writers didn't bother handling. Like, oh, right, I need to convey my sorrow because no one fucking bothered to put it in the script.
I like this. I bet you here's the deal. I bet you that the actual script is the word no with like a 5-paragraph parentheses explaining all the hurt in the no. And it just is conveyed by the actor because they won't tell us.
Yeah. That's mm-hmm. that's
how it works, right? Gina, you've done that.
Yeah.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I, Skeletor, have another warrior named Whiplash!
Battle Armor, He-Man, and Skeletor, Whiplash, and Buzzoff, each sold separately.
And I, He-Man, have a powerful winged warrior named Buzzoff! So it's the Super Sting of Buzzoff! Against the vicious tail of Whiplash! Ha-ha! Now, may the mightiest warrior win!
Buzzoff and Whiplash figures are new from the Masters of the Universe collection. Other action figures also sold separately from Mattel.
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
Yo, real okay. fast, have we gotten to, it's time for this miss to meet my fist yet?
We have not.
We're about to get there. That's close. Very soon.
We got to talk about the next thing.
Chan said we're not even close. Ray said we're very close. Tonally, this podcast is all over the place.
All over the place.
You guys, we're very close in the framing of I barely took any notes because so little was actually happening in this episode. So it feels like we're very close.
I pretty much just wrote down from one pun to the next, intercut with like angry rants about not understanding tone.
Well, undercutting the fact that the sorceress just died and everybody's upset about it, we get ghost sorceress almost immediately in the next scene, and then healing hands Teela gives to Adam because she's got sorceress power too. Surprise! And
here's
so,
the thing. My favorite part about this is that she, you know, the magic comes gushing out of her hands like they do, and the wound gets magically healed, and then for some reason the magic just zips up his blouse. Like, that wasn't necessary. You just left that open. What the fuck?
Yeah, I actually, that was super weird because, like, basically he gets stabbed. Teal tears his blouse open and then, like, heals the gaping wound. So his blood gets sucked back in. And I was just like, all right, that's a very considerate ghost. Like that's some considerate ghost magic. you know, because I often think about this and they had sort of a running gag about it on Luke Cage. But I often think about, like, you know, when people are sort of invulnerable, but they're getting shot, like you're still fucking up your clothes a lot. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this ghost magic sews back together his clothes, which is very considerate. And
I mean,
also
I feel like
gets
to change
the blood
outfits.
Out.
I don't want to do that.
There's no blood either. And they dry clean it. They
like
sew it up.
Shit.
I like it.
Mm.
I like it, but it's very weird.
You know who's not happy is the Eternian version of Ross, because I feel like they have to go to Ross a lot to replace the clothes that get torn. Constantly.
You're referring to Ross.
I definitely
Dress
thought
for
you meant
less,
Ross
from
Friends as opposed to
I
Ross Dress for Less.
Gina, I make you a promise. I will never, ever reference Friends.
Okay. Now we have to.
Wait a minute. Whoa.
We have to force Chan to reference Friends.
Wait a minute. I like how Chan was just about to say, why would I reference Ross from Friends as if referencing Ross Dress for Less was any better?
Yeah. I didn't even see, like, I think Ross Dress for Less is maybe a West Coast thing because I sure as hell did not know what it was when I moved out here. And I will tell you what, I went into one and immediately turned back around.
All right.
I love Ross Dress for Less. How dare you? How dare you?
It's terrible.
Something for us West Coast poors. All right. That's
it is. There was a great, when I was writing for the CBS showcase, there was a great sketch that someone wrote about a Ross Dress for Less, and it was like the employee training, and it was basically just like, you know, them training their employees, and they're like, all right, it's time to start our day. So the first thing we do is take all the clothes off the hooks and drop them on the ground. And then one of the employees is like, hey, you know what we should do with this pair of shoes? Separate them so you could only find one shoe. And it was very funny. And everything that was said, I was like, that is my experience every time I have ventured into a Ross.
Listen, Miss Moneybags, some of us don't have the option of going to a Mervyn's or a JCPenney.
I don't know what Mervyn's is, but I know that in New Jersey, we had Kmart's, and there piles of clothes on the ground at Kmart, but the prices were to die for.
Gina reppin' Kmart. There's three Kmart's left in the world. And that's the shingle she's going to hang.
It's because they paid their employees extra to pick the clothes up off the floor and hang them up.
And you know what? Was that a good choice? I don't know. How many fucking Rosses are there out there? Hundreds.
Thank you.
You know what? I bet there's a comparable amount of Kmart's to Rosses. I just think maybe not in California.
No, Gina, literally.
No, they there have are all like shut no down Kmart went three. Under.
Well, I watched a documentary about the last Blockbuster, and that place is thriving.
The one Blockbuster? Yes, it is. Yeah,
it was a good documentary. No, wait,
the one Blockbuster closed, I thought. Wait a minute.
No. Unless this documentary lied to me, it is still... I mean, I guess it's possible it closed during COVID, but no, if it closes, I mean, I will have watched a documentary for nothing on a plane.
What for nothing? What do you like watch a Holocaust documentary and like they're all dead now? Well, what did I watch that for? I don't think you know how documentaries work, Gina.
Look, if you're gonna do a whole documentary making me fall in love with the people who own this one Blockbuster, and then just at the end of the documentary you're gonna be like, hey, good news, it's doing great, and then a year later it's gonna shut down. I am gonna come and find those documentary makers.
Okay,
for making you feel feelings. Around.
I was wrong. It's called The Last Blockbuster in Bend, Oregon, and it is the last. It's still as of 2022. So I'm gonna accept Wikipedia on this. It is still around. I had honestly thought it had closed. I was wrong.
I'm telling you, you guys, there's a lot of like funny comedians that sort of drop by this place and you guys would enjoy it. And I'm not like a huge documentary person. But this is great. This is like this woman has like sort of like run this Blockbuster forever. And everyone in town, because of course it's in Bend, Oregon, have and like you see her getting calls in real time of like other stores shutting down and then being like, bad news, you and the other three stores are the last four stores, and then like she's like one of the last three stores, and then she's the last store. As soon as they become the last store, all these people are like, fuck, we better fly to the last Blockbuster. Let's plan a vacation to Bend, Oregon. And it's so awesome. It's a really good documentary.
So my question is, though, when that happened, and you've seen the documentary, does that Blockbuster location get the quickening?
Yes. It there can be only one. They do. They get powers in the form of all the costume swag that was at the other Blockbusters. Then get shipped to this Blockbuster.
Wow.
Yeah. So like they have some stuff. They have some stuff on display. And they get, and then people go there, influencers and such.
I got to push this plot forward because we still have more to do than I'm comfortable with.
You mean the last Skeletor plot? Okay. Yeah,
that's a great one.
No, let's talk about, there's a lot we got to cover about Holocaust documentaries. Let's start with Showa.
The biggest problem is all that they're so tonally off. You know, I don't need all those puns in my Holocaust documentary.
It was weird. I'm not going to lie. Yeah.
Schindler's I'm not going to make one because that would
more
be
more like Schindler's Fist. Am I right? Now,
here's the deal.
Mark Hamill doing the narration
to get to the missed fist pun.
I'd like to, but real quick plot point, because I liked this. This is the one part in this like oasis in an episode I did not like, which
I
is where Skeletor.
And I don't want this. Nope.
Skeletor zaps Evil Lyn and says, there's no sorceress. We need a sorceress. Congrats, you're the new sorceress. Oh, bad news. You're now confined to Castle Grayskull. You got all this power, but you can't leave this castle. Oh, well. And then they take away Man-at-Arms. And I was like, that's kind of cool that Skeletor would F over the person who got him here and was loyal to him all the time because that's who he is. He's the scorpion. What, the scorpion and the frog? Is that the one?
Yeah.
the parable? He's the scorpion who can't resist effing over everybody, who, despite the fact these people are on his side. And I kind of like that as a character moment. I like that as a plot moment. I just liked this moment. And I didn't like a lot of the stuff around it, but this part was cool.
Fair. Yeah. Yeah.
But what were you worried about I was going to like, Chan? Was it the fist gag? Because I did like that too.
No.
Child pornography?
No. Just before that.
No.
I mean, no. Like, I think we can all agree that child pornography is great and there should be more of it.
How dare you?
I mean, that's what you keep messaging me. And I, you know, I decline those messages, but they still keep showing up and it's weird. I wish you would stop, please.
Listen, Madison Cawthorn, I'm not hearing that from you. Oh my goodness gracious. Now we meet our two new friends, and I remember these guys, Clamp, Champ, and Fisto. You gotta love some Fisto. He's like Ram Man, but with a hand. I mean, that's Hold basically on. His deal.
We gotta talk about their entrance.
Yeah, when they're racist.
Yes. Ooh. Tang.
Oh my god, I did not notice that. Did
not pick up on Wu-Tang at all, no.
Did you? How could you not have? Who jumps down and upon landing says Wu, much less a second person jumping down next to them saying Tang? And the reason for this, obviously, if you watch the credits, is that Champ Clamp is played by Method Man.
Oh, which, okay, I like that.
Sure, I don't mind that.
Okay,
I like that. I like that. But I also feel like this show was written by someone who has severe ADD and is also very stoned.
Yeah, this checks out so far.
That helps like them
they're
focus,
going from
Gina.
Like one it helps thing that's focus. Like, and like it would, they're just like, you know, it would be cool. You know, it'd be cool. Is like bringing in some old character. Oh shit! What if we like got? What if we got Method Man to play one of them? Oh yeah. That's good. Hey, is that pie ready? Oh shit! What if he like punches someone and says Wu-Tang? Yeah, I feel like everything in this is just a series of stoned guys going from one thing they think will be cool to the other, putting it together, not editing it or looking at tone.
I mean, if you. Yeah, were to ask me how this would, if you said that is how this was made, I would be like, yes, 100%. I couldn't disagree with you in any point. It all sounds 100% right.
Chen, we got Fisto on the show. Can you just give me the sound drop? And you know the one I'm going to ask for. And can we just get this out of the way right now?
All right. I'd sure like to fist him.
I mean, you knew I was going to ask for it.
Oh no! It was definitely marked
I'm shocked
off.
It wasn't just immediately.
I marked it because it was one of the things that made me hurt inside. So I knew
I
that you would be
I
wanting to hear it.
I giggled uproariously.
Oh my god!
And this is now. The heroes get teleported away from Skeletor, and you're like, "Oh, cool, brief respite." And then 3 minutes later, Skeletor just shows up with this hulking death cloud. It's literally insta-kill gas that he can direct. And he's on this like city that they're trying to evacuate, Eternos, I believe. And then there's just these gas, it goes over you. And it's like, what is it? Raya, the Last Dragon, where the gas covers you, except that it like turns you to stone, but here it turns you to dead. And it just turns all these people dead. And he's just romping through this.
The reference for me was Heavy Metal, the original cartoon.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay, fair, uh-huh. Fair.
Yeah.
Heavy Metal.
But, yeah, you know, now that I have a four-year-old, my reference is going to switch from Heavy Metal to Raya the Last Dragon. That's just how it works. That,
yep. Mm-hmm. I get it, man.
You know, last time I watched Heavy Metal it was more than 4 years ago. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Be a fucking adult, man. Put your kid to bed and watch Heavy Metal. Damn it.
I would argue that watching Heavy Metal means that you're absolutely not an adult. That is absolutely a thing you should be watching at 16 years old and whacking off to. And then you turn like 20, and you're like, okay, I'm glad that happened. And now I will never watch it again.
No, wow. You gotta watch it to right see now. Like what, like. Plus, there was that South Park episode a few years back that was hilarious. That parodied it.
I doubt.
No
it.
One wants to hear your South Park references, Gina.
I doubt it was hilarious.
It was. Kenny keeps thinking he's gonna see boobs because in the original movie they keep like promising boobs, but then not showing full boobs.
Wait, what? Which version of Heavy Metal have you watched? Because
Heavy Metal 2000, the one I jerked it to,
absolutely had boobs in it.
No, there was a lot of boobs in that.
Copious boobs.
I don't know what we're talking about right now. That's
boobage for days. Nonstop.
No, because Heavy Metal 2000 came out, and they were like, just as edgy as the original. And it was the most PG shit you've ever seen. I have it on videotape somewhere. There's like one scene early on where they like pan across this desert, and these two aliens are like fucking... But you could like barely even see what's happening, and then like literally that's it. There's no nudity the rest of the entire movie, and I'm like, that's not as edgy as the. Maybe you don't understand why I'm here, Heavy Metal 2000.
No, they do, because the cover was Simon Bisley painting Julie Strain with enormous knockers. So yeah, no, they know what you're there for. They're just not going to give it to you.
It was really embarrassing. Okay, so this was just weird. The heroes are running from the gas monster. They run into like the palace or whatever, and then they close the door. And thank God that stops the gas. I don't really look. I'm no scientist, but Chan, how does this work as the resident science jerk of the show? How does closing the door stop the gas?
Look, you can hermetically seal a door. This is like the palace, whatever. So sure, yeah.
I don't have a problem with that. A thick ass, door.
Also, though, you're skipping right over.
You gotta give us the line. I'm sorry, you're right. We've been talking about it.
It's time for this mist to meet my fist.
Y'all thought it wasn't real. It's real. It's real. We're watching children die in the streets, and Fisto's got jokes. It's. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not great. There's a big fight. I don't even have I very much lost interest in the episode at this point. So I just wrote here, gas monsters fight, boom. That's all I got. I couldn't tell you at this point what happened. I watched it yesterday.
This is when Fisto and Clamp Champ, who Tila will call Clamp Champ his full name. Just like if I were to walk up to, one day, like, hey, what's up, Race to Canis? We're going to the In-N-Out Burger or something like that.
I would immediately think you were a Terminator. I would immediately run for my life.
they kill the two dudes. Because again, yeah,
that's right.
Like there's no reason for us to care about them except that maybe we had the toys, 30 years ago. So to kill him right off, who cares? Nobody cares.
Skeletor just shows up again because, we don't get any reprieve from him. He's just winning this whole episode. He's going to keep on winning, goddammit. And he kills, they kill the two, Fisto and Clamp Champ. And he takes their souls, and they make this is so fucking stupid. Like, I'm sorry. Narratively, this is so goddamn stupid. They make a whole point of it. They have a whole like scene and monologue and backstory where they're like, well, these two heroes died heroically, so they get to go to the good place. And then Skeletor is immediately like, oh, are you telling that story about how they'll go to the good place? Well, I'm going to make sure they go to the bad place because I can do that now. Ha ha ha. And I'm just like, just fuck off with that. Why would you introduce a plot point just to immediately shit on it? I didn't care in the first place. I double don't care now. That made me mad.
Yep.
Gina, any thoughts on that?
I didn't have enough emotional energy to be angry still at this point. I just know that in a second I'm going to be worried for Cringer's health again. And
well, okay, so we have like, hey, guys, want to fight? Because I'm He-Man, and I always wondered what would happen if I called the power of the power sword without actually holding the power sword. That was just my conduit. Now I have ultimate He-Man power. And then he powers up as He-Man, but he's like a barbarian. He doesn't like have like he's like the Hulk now, where he's like big and strong, but kind of loses himself into a savage realm. That's sort of the vibe I got. And then that's the end of the episode. Skeletor looks very scared, which I guess is good.
He was naked except for a fur loincloth. So like you can be forgiven for thinking that that was the case. We'll see. Cause he hasn't actually talked yet. He hasn't, gone all unga bunga on us yet. We shall see in episode 2.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be like, I enhance my power, but I lose a little bit of myself. We're going to use that trope a little bit, right? I'm wondering. I don't know.
I'm not wondering.
I definitely, like, I thought Fisto and Clampchamp turning into monsters was kind of fun for about 2 seconds.
I don't know. I mean, honestly, I thought that it was going to be, because, like, they turn into monsters, and then Teela's sort of like, it's me, come to your senses. And I was like, oh, is this going to be, like, sort of a little bit of a back and forth where he's, like, trying to fight the mist? But none of that happens. He just stays a monster and then dies.
No, none of it happens.
Nobody cares.
That should be the tagline of this episode, is just then none of it happens. .. You know, that's too bad. It's a lot of cool things that could have happened, and they just chose not to. So that's He-Man. That is it. That's He-Man. Part 2, Episode 1. What is it? Cleaved in Twain.
I looked it up, and I could not find a New Zealand thrash metal band called Cleaved in Twain. So I'm calling double bullshit on this.
Maybe that's Shania Twain's alt group. Maybe that's what that is.
Like her Chris Gaines. I could get into that.
Yeah. You know what? I'm down with that. Not always here for a Garth Brooks reference, but you know what? I liked it.
I mean,
I'll hold it up.
You got to keep up. Both of you, Gina. Come on now. Chris Gaines. Jesus. Who doesn't love a good Garth Brooks reference?
I'm not the demo for that, man.
You think I am?
Yeah.
I'm looking for a goddamn New Zealand thrash metal bands. Garth Brooks is not my cup of tea.
What's sad is I am the demo for that. What a disaster. Anyway, that's our show. He-Man, Masters of the Universe, Revelations, Part 2, Episode 1. I am committed to doing all 5 episodes of Part 2. If I can get the other people on board, and I don't see why not. Often they're just looking for something to watch at the end of the day, and we're running out of time. So that's how I'm going to sneak these in every time we get to that position.
At some point, I'm going to like inevitably get hired on a season of this, and then someone is going to discover these episodes.
It's cool. Literally, we'll scrub them from the internet.
Yeah, we're just going to get that in our group chat. It's just going to be, guys, I have a real serious favor to ask. I need you to wipe all existence of these, at least until the show's over, at least until my job in the show is over. And then we'll go back and we'll watch them and we'll get all the inside scoop.
I mean, I'm starting to feel guilty because I'm really not a publicly insult current writing type person. But with this,
making fair points, Gina. I don't think you're going out. You're not going out of your way to shit on anything. And I think you're being very respectful. But there's just a lot of mistakes being made in front of you, and it's driving you crazy as somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Me crazy.
And that's fair, too. Uh-oh.
I just don't understand why anybody would even be listening to this. Like, we've firmly established in the first half of the season that we do not care for it, and there's not a whole lot more to go into. It continues to be awful.
Yeah, but we don't care for it in different ways, moment to moment.
I feel like Chan and I are pretty much on the same page about.
You got a Chris Gaines reference in there.
I mean, there is that, and that does make me feel good. Will it make anybody else feel good? Probably not.
You know, I bet Channing Sherman was all over it. I'm just going to say it right now. Channing, you know what to do. You know how to reach out to us. Dude, can we talk about the pillowcase
cool
for a second?
Pillowcases.
You sent out a goddamn pillowcase.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome.
I'm not going to lie. I'm making it
more than double. The pillowcase cost more than double any of the t-shirts. Actually, the pillowcase cost more than three times anybody else's order of a t-shirt. And it was on sale. It was so expensive.
Love it.
And I can't believe I didn't look into the prices when I said, yeah, man, pillowcase is great. Not that I'm, look, it's great. We love our patrons and we wanted to take care of them. JRC, thank you for sharing that pillowcase picture with us. It's huge. It's also double-sided, which I thought was a little bit weird. And it came with a pillow. Like this, look, our RT Public Store goes for it. If you have room for a Knowing It's Half the Podcast pillowcase in your house,
this
don't
is a serious
mind
question.
Dropping a princely sum.
Are your pillowcases not double-sided?
Mine are.
Usually if you get a logo pillowcase, it only comes on one side and the other side is
no,
blank.
No, sir. That buy them at standard. Society 6. Mine are all double-sided, which is great because I like to rotate them.
My Totoro pillows that I think I got at Tokyo Market are only single-sided, but they only cost like $6, so I ain't complaining.
Yeah, the Society 6 ones are all double-sided.
I mean, here's the deal. Go to our T Public store. You can find a probably in the description of this episode. If not, I should probably add that. And go to our T Public store and check it out. Like, we have some great logos and designs, and you could get that on a pillowcase for like only like one lung. Donate one lung, and that's how you get it. It's expensive, but I like it. Nice. High
Look,
quality.
You want your
and I've
cat
got your guys'
to
t-shirts
love their
here
fur
too.
All
I got
over
t-shirts
my face.
Together. Oh, wait, who's coming over for Easter? Gina, you got to roll by for Easter for a moment so I can give you your very soft plush t-shirt.
Oh, wait, when's Easter?
I don't know. Just come by sometime so I can give it to you.
Soon enough.
Well, you could also bring it to my birthday.
Okay, I think we just found our answer. There's your birthday present.
Don't expect it wrapped.
You did it to yourself. Chan, how dare you, Chan? I have gift bags. In fact, I'm
if anybody else wants to send Gina birthday
gifts,
send it care of me.
Thank you. I'll be bringing them all. So get ready for that. Gina's birthday is coming up. I assume everybody who listens to the show is invited, right? Gina, can we give away some private information here and let everybody know where they can show up?
I think 99% of our listeners are not in LA, so luckily no one can murder me.
So Gina has put it on the record. If you live in LA and listen to the show, she would love you to come to her birthday celebration.
Yeah, it's at 1234 Main Street.
Yes, 1234 Main Street.
Everytown, Los Angeles.
Everytown, Los Angeles. Yeah, that's exactly that's the address I got. So I'm looking forward to it. I haven't been there before.
I feel like
a new place.
Are you telling untruths to the audience?
I'm not great with addresses, but I think that's what it said.
No, I put it into Yahoo Maps, and it said, "Why are you using Yahoo Maps?" So I mean, that's pretty common response for real places. You can find us online at facebook.com/knowingishalfthepodcast. Go to patreon.com/knowingishalfthepodcast and celebrate us on that. Why not? It's a celebration. You can get merch there too and go to our store on TeePublic. I guarantee that when this comes out, there will be a link to the store in the description of the episode below. Otherwise, you can hit us up on Twitter at G.I. Joe Podcast or individually. I am at Almighty Ray.
At 999 RPMs.
I'm at Gina Ippy.
And thank you so much for enjoying this episode of Masters of the Universe Revelation, Part 2, Episode 1, Cleaved in Twain. Chan, take us out with a quote from the show.
Cleft.
A quote from the show.
Cleft.
Ruled by the demon Skeletor and his evil acolytes, and the only thing that stands in their way is Prince Adam, who defends the secrets of Castle Grayskull as He-Man, the most powerful man in the universe. Only four others share this secret, Guardians of Grayskull all, amidst an army of the honorable, committed to guarding Castle Grayskull from the havoc of destruction. For those who control Grayskull control the power to be Masters of the Universe.
Hi, I'm Kevin Goatee.
Hey, I'm Kevin Israel.
We host Gutting the Sacred Cow, the best and most unique movie debate podcast out there. Why?
Because we invite our guests to pick a film that they find overrated or hate and try to convince us to see their argument.
They must pick a film that is a financial success, widely beloved, or critically acclaimed.
That's right. Some of the films our guests have tried to eviscerate, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Pulp Fiction, Ghostbusters? You can find us on all podcast platforms like Apple, Google, Spotify, and more. And if you want to watch our smiling faces, we're also on YouTube.
GuttingTheSacredCow.com is where you find all of our information. And we look forward to our guests infuriating you when they attack your favorite films.